This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Right now, America's big banks are reporting strong third quarters. Let's take a closer look with Jeff Hart, Managing Director at Piper Sandler here in Chicago. Jeff, we'll dig into a couple of these banks specifically, but let's begin with kind of an overview. How are banks looking?
Well, the quarter's coming in pretty well, and really the drivers have been capital markets. You talk in investment banking and trading revenues and credit, right? It's just credit, the credit environment is so good and actually continuing to get a little better. So that's really kind of propelled results. But I think investors have been more focused on kind of the outlook or kind of look through the windshield as opposed to looking in the rearview mirror at kind of what happened in 3Q21. And we've gotten kind of mixed results there. It's kind of hard to read the tea leaves a little bit, but certainly what we've heard today has been good in that, you know, a strong earnings beat, the outlook for things like capital markets and where loan growth and rates are higher. I mean, there's a lot of things, a lot of relatively good things we're hearing today relative to bad things. I think the real question for banks here is what drives kind of the next leg up, because you really – I think need to start seeing some loan growth materialize, or you know, some positive surprises, and especially with the run some of them had the last month, they're starting to price in a pretty good environment.
So let's talk about Citigroup. Pretty good profit here, up 48%.
Yeah, and it was, you know, better than we were expecting, and I mean, credit drove a big chunk of it, which the investors tend not to pay a whole lot for. But even absent that, these are good numbers. I think, you know, the thing maybe weighing a little bit more on Citigroup relative to some of the peers is just some of the uncertainty surrounding it, right? I mean, I would have thought Citigroup shares would be more than essentially flat given the strong quarter. But, you know, they've got a consent order outstanding, and they're selling some of their Asian consumer businesses. And there's some uncertainty, which is kind of keeping their shares from maybe reflecting just how strong the quarter was.
And let's move over to Bank of America. How are they looking?
Well, I tell you, they had about as good a quarter as you could have hoped for. You know, some of the things that concerned people about J.P. Morgan yesterday, like the expense trajectory some of the net interest income headwinds, B of A kind of got around, right? Their expenses were good, their banking was good, and net interest income-wise, they're putting excess liquidity to work. So, I mean, it was B of A's, you know, reacted positively today. And honestly, given what we were expecting coming in, this is about as good a result as I think we could have hoped for.
So what should investors think here? Are there buying opportunities? Have they maybe missed the window in bank stocks?
Well, I mean, you always have to be a little selective, you know, as far as try not to buy at the peak necessarily. But I think, you know, depending on your outlook, there's still more room for banks to run. I mean, if we get solid economic growth, which it seems like we are, and, you know, interest rates get a little more favorable, I mean, you can certainly make the case that there's more to come. Definitely banks have made a big run the last month, so some of the quote-unquote easy money has been made. But I think you can definitely still kind of be selectively getting into names. I'd be looking at the big names, the B of A, the J.P. Morgans, the Goldman Sachs of the world.
Good insight. Thanks so much for the analysis. Jeff Hart, Managing Director at Piper Sandler here in Chicago. An app that you download to your phone could actually be spying on you. Let's learn more from Adam Levin, co-host of the podcast What the Hack with Adam Levin, author of the book Swiped, based in New York. Adam, I've always been told if you don't have to pay for an app, then you are the product, right? You are how that app is making money. And so I'm guessing that's one of the reasons why we get this thing called stalkerware.
Well, that's right, Cisco. The situation here is that oftentimes you have no idea this app is on your phone because it hasn't been downloaded by you. It's been downloaded by a significant other or someone who may now no longer be significant. And as a result, what it does is it, think of it as it records your phone calls, keystroke logs, which is when you log into an account, that it either gathers that information or transmits it to the person. It can track your location. It can upload your photos to a remote server. Pretty much they all work the same way. An abuser with access to your device installs the app on your phone and disguises it as a simple piece of software, like a calendar app. And it lurks in the background, and later the abuser retrieves the data. Now, sometimes it's sent to their email or can be downloaded from a website. And in other scenarios, it's somebody who knows your passcode. They can just simply unlock the device, open the stalkerware, and then review the recorded data.
Is this the sort of thing that's legal? I mean, it sounds like it shouldn't be, but is it?
It's kind of weird. It's in a gray area because these apps were originally designed with good intent. And the good intent was keep track of where your kids are, what they're doing, who they're communicating with. Or if you have, let's say, an elderly relative, and in particular one with Alzheimer's or dementia, it lets you kind of know where they are so that if they suddenly disappear, that you can be there to help them. Unfortunately, oftentimes, as my mother used to say, no good deed goes unpunished, which means people use these for sinister purposes. So it's still a gray area. People are pushing for laws, and they're also pushing for antivirus companies to really get more tuned into stalkerware. Google has pretty much now is in the process of banning stalkerware apps from their store. But it's still out there, and 60% more people are using stalkerware apps now than they were just a year or so ago.
So how can you know if something like this is on your phone? I mean, is there a way to really know?
Well, one of the things is that if you note that there's unusual behavior, like, for instance, your battery rapidly drains, that could be a giveaway that a stalkerware app is running in the background. You can also have programs like Malwarebytes, Certo, Norton LifeLock, or Lookout that can detect stalkerware. But you want to take a close look at your apps yourself to see if there's anything on there that looks suspicious. But before you delete it, you may want to think twice because you may need it as evidence against the stalker. You can also seek help by going to the National Domestic Violence Hotline or the Safety Net Project, which is hosted by the National Network to End Domestic Violence. You can also audit accounts to see which apps or devices are hooked up to them. And then what you do is preventative measure, change your passwords and your passcode to your phone, enable two-factor authentication, and on your iPhone, check your settings. But as Apple says, this is not an iPhone vulnerability because it requires a hacker or an attacker to be on the same Wi-Fi network and have physical access to your unlocked iPhone.
Really, really fascinating. A little scary, too, but fascinating stuff. Thanks for all that insight, Adam Levin. He is co-host of the podcast What the Hack with Adam Levin, also author of the book Swiped.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chicago-based McDonald's testing out a meatless burger, while the latest report from Domino's is triggering concerns of possible pizza overload in the pandemic. Let's get the latest from R.J. Hodavy, head of analytical research at the foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, and I want to find out about this McDonald's plant burger, but I hear pizza fatigue. And it just doesn't even seem like something that's possible. So help us understand here what they're concerned about with Domino's.
Yeah, well, so the key story, the key takeaway coming out of Domino's third quarter update was same store sales declined for the first time in 41 quarters. There was a decline of 1.9%. Now, keep in mind that comes on top of a 17% gain in the third quarter last year when a lot of consumers in lockdown had, had gone to Domino's or ordered from Domino's. So if you look at it on a two-year basis, still pretty healthy. But, I think that what we're seeing here is that, maybe consumers are branching out to other, other delivery services. We did see a lot of promotional activity from companies like DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber Eats this past quarter. So there was some competition on that front. Interestingly enough, the company also said that they were seeing some pressure because of labor staffing issues, not being able to get enough drivers and employees. And so they had to operate some locations limited hours, and so also said that was an impact on that. My suspicion as we look into the fourth quarter here, we'll continue to see Domino's will be a destination for people's pizza orders, largely some of the restrictions we've seen for full-service restaurants, as well as those that really can't operate outside anymore. We'll continue to see this as a place that people go to. I think there is some fatigue, but at the same time, I don't think Domino's is going away anytime soon either.
Yeah, let's talk about McDonald's here. The McPlant burger, working with Beyond Meat, testing out something new.
Yeah, so the company's going to roll out a McPlant burger, which they announced late last year that they were going to begin testing in the United States this year. They are planning to roll out to 8 test markets this year, scattered around the various parts of the country. What's interesting here is that it's a little bit late to the game. Burger King first rolled out their Impossible Whopper in 2019, and several other quick service restaurant chains have also done that. Most of those did very well out of the gates just because there was a novelty behind the product. Nobody had really seen that before, and a lot of consumers, frankly, wanted to see if it tasted like real meat. At this point, I think we've kind of settled into a normalized environment where consumers, the restaurant companies have to keep this on the menu just because there are certain people who want that. That way you can still accommodate an entire family. You won't get that veto vote that prevents the family from going in. That said, how much bang for the buck McDonald's is going to get off of this launch? It's certainly going to be less than I think what Burger King saw. But at the same time, I think it's probably something that there is enough demand to keep it on the menu.
Yeah, almost something it seems like they have to do. Almost everyone does. Thank you. That's RJ Hottovy with Placer AI here in Chicago.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Stocks are trading way higher. Let's see what's going on. Chuck Carlson is here, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter based in Hammond. Chuck, what do you make of what you're seeing today on Wall Street?
Well, Cisco, it's a response to pretty good news on a number of fronts. First, as we discussed earlier today, you had a jobless claims number that really had fallen back to pre-pandemic levels. So, that gave relief to that employment number here, the last employment number, which had people concerned that perhaps the employment picture is still looking up. So that was a positive. Second, we're right at the beginning of corporate earnings season, and so far, so good. I mean, you had the banks
reporting pretty strong results. Today you had a few healthcare-related companies that came out, United Healthcare being one of them, with pretty strong results. And the stocks, more importantly, stocks are responding well to those earnings. So you have two pretty good data points giving investors solace that the economy is headed in the right direction, and thus you're getting a nice rally today.
As we're looking forward to the rest of earnings season, any areas that maybe you're particularly concerned about where maybe we're not going to see the good earnings like we saw in the banks?
No, I think the earnings will be okay in terms of the absolute number. What usually matters most, though, is how those earnings meet expectations. And so it'll be interesting to see in some pretty key areas such as, you know, semiconductors, for example. That's a very important group within the technology sector. And it has been a group that's been kind of so-so at best here in the last month and a half and 2 months. And I think it's a group that the market will ultimately need to perform better in order for the broad market to do better. So, you know, that's a group that people should watch and see, not just the absolute earnings number, but how are those earnings meeting expectations? So that's a group that we have we're going to be looking at pretty closely.
And are we still concerned about inflation in any of these sectors? Not only is there reporting earnings, but is there looking forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and again, that probably the biggest problem for any stock market is this idea of stagflation, where you have rising inflation, which we have right now. You know, it remains to be seen whether it's transitory or more permanent, and we'll have to see how that goes. But there's no doubt inflation is up. So an inflationary market against the backdrop of a lousy economy, a stagnant economy. And, you know, we don't want that. So that's why these data points here, both earnings and the jobless claims, are, you know, putting less pressure on the kind of the stagflation argument. But, yeah, inflation's going to, you know, the market's driven primarily by three things: interest rates, corporate profits, and inflation. And inflation can be very punitive on stocks. So, yeah, that where that heads is going to have a big say on where the market goes.
And what about, we've talked about this before, some of these travel stocks that have, they got hit really hard at the beginning of the pandemic, rebounded a little bit once things got open, and yet they're still, for the most part, not even close to where they were pre-pandemic.
Well, you know, they keep coming out with some issues. You know, the airlines, for example, appear to have some real staffing problems, and you couple that with the sharp rise in fuel costs that's going to hurt them. So, you know, they keep kind of getting hit with some of these issues that are going to limit their profitability in the near term. I think the lows on those stocks are probably going to be held, but, you know, trying to get a sustained move to the upside in the face of some of these headwinds against staffing, fuel costs, et cetera, you know, that's going to be a problem for those companies here for a bit.
What's the Dow theory telling us?
The last major signal under the Dow theory was that the primary trend of the market is bullish. One of the good news from a Dow theory perspective that we've seen here is that, well, you know, the broader market, the Dow Industrials, S&P 500, have kind of rolled over a little bit and have been kind of in a malaise. Those Dow Jones Transportation Average has really picked up quite nicely, actually, over the last month, and is trading now at a level that above a level that it traded 3 months ago. So, you know, if the Dow transports continue to show strength, that's going to be a boom, not just for the Dow theory, but it's going to be helpful for the broad market as well.
Thanks for the insight. Always good advice and wisdom from Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Technology Thursday. This afternoon, we're exploring the world of non-fungible tokens. Here to help us out, Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management. His website, senecalcapital.com. Bill, we've talked about NFTs quite a bit on this show, and yet I think there's still a lot of people who understandably are confused about them. So help us to understand, what is a non-fungible token?
Well, Cisco, in order to understand a non-fungible token, let's just take a second and discuss what something that is fungible, what it means. So fungible means something is basically identical. So cash U.S. dollars are fungible, and they're accepted everywhere. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm in Italy, El Salvador, Michigan Avenue, Illinois, or California. All dollars are the same. They operate the same, and they are a fungible good. shares of stock are fungible. So if I buy 100 shares of IBM, it doesn't matter which brokerage firm I buy them through. I can deliver them to TD Ameritrade, Fidelity, Schwab, or my local bank trust account. So shares of stock are fungible. What isn't fungible is like wheat futures, like hard red winter wheat contract. It is not fungible or deliverable against yellow number two corn at the Board of Trade, right? Baseball cards, music, art are not fungible because each one has its own unique value, its unique personality, so to speak. So a non-fungible token is a cryptocurrency or a digital asset that's unique. It's not like Bitcoin, which is the same as every other Bitcoin. So Coinbase recently made the announcement that they're going to create a marketplace, a lot like eBay, for non-fungible tokens. Now, non-fungible tokens is basically art that has been put on the blockchain, and they've done almost $14 billion in sales in 2021. So non-fungible tokens is any kind of digital cryptocurrency or digital asset, a piece of art, music, anything that's different and small, but still has the providence that other type of tokens have. So when you monetize, when artists are monetizing their works by creating an NFT, like say, for example, they have a little doodle pad on their phone and they're just doodling different color art, they can mint those. The process is called minting, and you create a digital, MP3 file or a WAV file, a JPEG file, and you put it on the blockchain, and now it becomes magically an NFT. And that's what non-fungible tokens are. They're little individual pieces of digital art or music that the owner retains ownership, and they can sell them in an eBay-like setting.
And so for your average person who's not an artist, is this a way that you can buy and sell? And it's sort of like another way to potentially make money as you're getting into these assets?
Oh, absolutely. Anybody can go online to OpenSea, which is kind of like another platform, Rarible, and you can buy non-fungible tokens, but you're going to have to use either U.S. dollars or use other cryptocurrency to purchase it. So it's interesting. This is big because DraftKings, which is traded on the exchange, Coinbase, which is traded on the exchange, what they're doing is they're entering in relationships with the National Football League, the National Hockey League, the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And they're taking little moments in sports history, you know, that dunk shot, that famous slap shot into the net. They're capturing that on video. They're using their licensing power as the NHL, and they're creating a limited edition video that is a non-fungible token. The golfer, Tiger Woods, you can buy a copy of his digital signature that's been authenticated and has provenance. You can spend like up to $9,000 for that. There's a collection of Tiger Woods digital assets that are limited edition on a digital platform that have all the provenance that protect it from forgery and duplication.
Let me ask you. I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is what I guess confuses me about this is, okay, let's say, like you're saying, with Tiger Woods, you know, his digital signature and it's going for $9,000. Tiger Woods, in theory, could create 5 million of those and put them all individually into NFTs. That's why I don't understand the rush to pay all kinds of money for some of these digital assets.
Well, that's true. He could create 5 million of them, but who's going to buy him if there's 5 million non-fungible tokens? What makes the non-fungible token interesting is that you can create a limited edition. You can create 10 of them or 5 of them, or his famous shots can all be done in a limited edition of 12 or 15 rather than millions that are generated. So it's the fact that it's on a blockchain that creates the limited edition. It's up to the author, though. Yeah, you're right, Cisco. I could create 10 million of them. There's no value to that. But if I create 4 of them, now that's a big deal.
Yeah, that helps a lot. That makes it a lot more clear. Thanks so much for all the insight, Bill Ulivary. A lot of money being made in NFTs. Bill Ulivary of Senecal Capital Management.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A new credit card lets you earn cash back and plant trees around the world. Let's talk about the possibilities for making an environmental impact. Ted Rossman is here. He's an industry analyst at creditcards.com. Ted, for people concerned about the environment, wanting to do everything that they can in order to clean it up, help us to understand how a credit card can do that.
Yeah, there's this new Aspiration Zero credit card, and they pledge to plant a tree every time you make a purchase with the card. And there's also some other incentives in here. They say just using the card once per day will zero out the average person's entire carbon footprint. And they're going to give you half of 1% cash back on all of your purchases, and then they'll actually double that to 1% if you make 60 qualifying transactions in a month, or if you round up the change on 30 qualifying transactions. So there is a bit of an opportunity cost here. I think it's well-minded, and I think it caters to young adults, Gen Zers in particular, who care a lot about environmental and social topics. It does beg the question, though, would you be better off maybe using a 2% cashback card and then just donating those funds if you're so inclined?
Well, see, and that's, I guess that's dependent upon how disciplined you are, right, in actually doing that when you get the cash back?
Right. I think that, you know, one thing that is nice and convenient about this is they say every time you make a purchase, they're going to plant a tree. So that just happens automatically. You're right. There's no friction. Lots of credit card companies will let you donate your rewards. And sometimes they even give you a bonus, like with certain Chase cards, you can stretch that cash back 25 or 50% further. Amex and Discover have programs where you can donate this. A lot of airlines too. So there's a lot of ways to be charitable with your rewards points and miles. I do think that, you know, with Aspiration, they're really trying to bring it back to the brand and this whole sustainability kind of ethos. You know, they also have a debit card and a linked bank account. They talk about how your purchases will not go to funding the oil or coal industries. I mean, this is really like a true environmental believer kind of thing. But they say a lot of people are gravitating to it. And I do think this kind of brand marketing is resonating with young adults. And, you know, if people like it and they stick with it, that's a win.
Thanks so much for all that. Ted Rossman, industry analyst, creditcards.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.